Hello, hockey fans, and welcome back to another edition of This Week in Wisconsin Prep Hockey. I'm Mike Hammond, our usual panel of guests along, except Del Scanlon, who's out on special assignment tonight. And we've had all kinds of playoff action going on, and some of the guys have been out in the field to check out a couple of games. And Bergler, well, he's been a busy guy. He went to two of them last week. And Bergler, you got to see Anago and Lakeland and Mosinee at DC Everest. And give us the 411 on it.
Thanks, MJ. Had to wipe a little egg off my face when I went up to watch the Lakeland Thunderbirds at Anago. I went up there at the normal 6:30 expecting a 7 o'clock game, and I get there, and I'll be darned, but the Northern Edge was playing against Lakeland in their playoff game. Silly me, I just assumed that they'd be playing that game in Rhinelander and that the boys' game would start at 7. And I blew it, missed a chance to catch a doubleheader there, so I didn't see the girls' game. The Northern Edge did beat Lakeland in that game to advance. The game I saw, the boys' game, started an hour later, so I got to, you know, sit around for an hour. Alex Nagel got things started, scoring just 18 seconds into the game, and from there it was on. The Robins scored three times in the first period, four times in the second period. Lakeland got a goal at the midway point of the second period, but after two periods it was 7-1, and that's how it stayed. It was a little bit of keep away at the end, got into running time, so the third period was a little short. Robins outshot Lakeland 48-13 in that game. I guess what you'd expect from a number two seed against a number seven. Then I went Friday.
Hold on. Question for you.
Yes.
I mean, okay. One of the benefits of a seeded tournament is that, you know, the one seed, the two seed, they get games like that.
Yes.
Do you think that that harms them at all, given that the next game they play is likely going to be against a three seed or a four seed, playing a game that, you know, that, you know, 7-1 after two periods, third period was basically a passing drill. Does that hurt Anago going into their game against Spash on Tuesday?
I think Spash had pretty much the same.
They did. They beat up on Northland Pines 8-1.
Right. And I mean, Northland Pines and Lakeland are both teams that, you know, Anago handled, so Spash handled them. So I think they're pretty much in the same boat coming in. I think now the next game I saw a four versus a five seed, and that was a much tighter game. That was Mosinee at DC Everest. That ended up being a 4-2 game with the fourth goal coming on an empty net, but that was back and forth. Mosinee scored first period, then Everest scored. Mosinee scored in the second period, then Everest scored. And then Everest got the killer, a bad breakout pass from deep in the Everest end through the middle, intercepted by Dalton Weller right in the slot, and he fired the puck in. So, you know, instead of an opportunity to go into the locker room after two periods tied at two, Mosinee found themselves down 3-2 after two periods. And I always maintain that you don't want to get scored on in the first minute or the last minute of a period. It just really brings you down in that locker room afterwards. But that was a tough game. So DC Everest and Mosinee was a tough game. Wausau West had a pretty easy time with their game. So, Bill, going by your theory, DC Everest is going to be more ready, perhaps, to play Wausau West, who had an 8-0 win over Stevens Point Pacelli. And DC Everest has played West twice, both times this year that they played him. It was 4-2. A 4-2 West win the first time, and the shots were fairly, not real close, but fairly close in that first game. The second time, West beat Everest 2-1 in overtime and outshot him by a ton. But Michael Yonke, for goalie for DC Everest, probably had his game of the season in that game. So perhaps, you know, a tougher tuna, you know, more of a get ready thing for West than, or I mean for Everest than what West had, but they'll be playing each other on Tuesday. But I won't be there.
Why not?
Well, I'll be watching Spash play against Antigo, just over there, at that rink just around the corner.
Well, how about a look at our players of the week, our Radisson-Madison players of the week, Madison's premier West Side Hotel, girls' side, Abby Cardew from Fox Cities. She's a forward, 2 goals in a 2-1 win over the Lakeshore Lightning. Boys, Sean Driscoll, defenseman from Homestead, had a fantastic week. His stats, they just don't matter. He just had a great week. So Sean Driscoll is our boys' player of the week, brought to you by the Radisson-Madison, Madison's premier West Side Hotel and the headquarters for Wisconsin Prep Hockey during the Boys and Girls State Tournament.
Well, we must also mention that Homestead is the only team on the boys' side to actually win 2 games. Last week.
Yep, they beat Beaver Dam 8-2 on Tuesday, and then came back and beat Fond du Lac, the 3 seed. Homestead was the 6 seed, 4-3. I want to say that was in overtime, but I'm not entirely certain. On Friday, so 2 wins for Homestead. The only team to do it on either side, actually, boys or girls.
Well, we had a chance to, as we move along here in the show, more game recaps. Trasher, you had the opportunity to watch your Wisconsin Rapids Red Raiders take on the Toma Timberwolves. And Michael, take it away.
Taking it away. Thank you, sir. Tuesday night at the Southwood County Rec Center. No, Thursday night, I'm sorry. Can't keep my night straight. And I got a chance to see Toma and Rapids, and that was another 7 seed and 2 seed, with Rapids being the number 2 seed. Logan Conkey scored 3 minutes into the first period to give Rapids an early lead. 6 minutes later, Bailey Piper scored for Toma to tie the game up at 1, and that was about the last hurrah for Toma. Rapids scored again with Conkey in the first period to go to the locker room with a 2-1 lead. They scored 4 times in the second, 1 time 2 minutes into the third period to send the game to runtime, and the Red Raiders came away with a 7-1 victory over the Timberwolves. Shots in the game, as expected, 43-13 in favor of Rapids, which is kind of their modus operandi during the season. Tanner Rainey, the freshman goalie for the Red Raiders, had 12 saves on 13 shots, and senior Brody Pierce for the Toma Timberwolves stopped 36 of 43. The Red Raiders will move on to tomorrow night's action. They will take on West Salem. That'll be a home game at the Southwood County Rec Center. So, like Berglard said, pretty much expected when 7-2s match up. We haven't seen much for upsets in this tournament, if any. I mean, I think a 6-3 was about the only one. Otherwise, it was just the 5s beating 4s or 9s beating 8s or something silly like that. Nothing really too serious. But so that's what I have. MJ, we'll send her back to you. Tell us about KMMO in Janesville.
Well, my good buddy John Breimer brought his squad over, the KMMO guys, visitors to Janesville to take on the Bluebirds on last Thursday night. And the Bluebirds got started early in that game, got a power play goal from Ben Coulter. And just like that, though, KMMO came right back and made it tied up at 1-1. Bluebirds are able to get another goal and go back up again, this time from Ty Perkins, to make it a 2-1 game. That was in the second period. And late in the second period, Janesville had a power play, but it was a shorthanded goal that tied the game up by KMMO. So we had a 2-2 game after two. But one of the telling moments was late in that second period as the buzzer sounded to end the second period. Janesville got called for a roughing penalty. So that meant that KMMO was going to start out on the power play in the third period. Well, they started out on the power play. They weren't even a minute into the power play, and they were already up 3-2. And it looked like KMMO was on their way to victory, as Janesville just could not put anything consistent together. And as much as they tried, it just wasn't happening. KMMO seemed to have an answer for everything, as goaltender Paul McLean played very well in that game. But both teams used their timeouts late in the game. Finally, with about 30 seconds left in the game, there was a faceoff. And I think KMMO had thought that there was a penalty on the play that ensued after the faceoff, because it seemed like the players hesitated for a moment, and that gave Kyler Cobbs from Janesville just enough time to get the puck past Paul McLean to tie it up at 3 with about 15 seconds or so going off the top of my head, 24 seconds left in the game. We had a tie game at 3, and we went to overtime. KMMO did get a shot on goal in that overtime, and the stop was made by Jack Bostet. But Janesville came back down with just over 2 minutes left in the overtime. And Jack McDougal was able to get a shot off. Paul McLean made the save, and the rebound came right back out. McLean was sliding left, and McDougal shot right, and there's a gaping net wide open, and he hit the shot. It was in the net, and the celebration was on, and KMMO, who I really thought was going to win this game, ended up losing the game 4-3 to Janesville. It was just a funny game because Janesville just did not have their game that night, and KMMO was just doing enough to win the game. But it seemed like once it got to overtime, it just seemed like Janesville was able to grind out that goal to win it. So Janesville wins 4-3 over KMMO in a pretty entertaining game. Janesville now moves on to Section 7 sectional semis against number 2 Milwaukee Marquette. That coming up this Tuesday night, guys.
Yeah, MJ, one other thing I forgot to mention. When I was at the game on Thursday in Antigo, somewhere late in the third period, I felt a disturbance in the force. And I realized it was coming from the western part of the state. It was a huge sigh of relief coming from the Hudson and New Richmond areas when they learned that Superior had lost and they didn't have to worry about them anymore this season, because even though the Superior team hadn't won but 3 games during the regular season, 1 playoff game, you never really quite knew what they were up to over there, and if they were just waiting to try to pull something out this year like they did last year. But kind of a huge sigh of relief when Hudson especially noticed that Superior was gone, because they have been a roadblock for Hudson to get back to the state tournament for a number of years now.
And even though that was a 6-3 Superior in Somerset, that game was well contested. It was tied 2-2 after 2 periods, and even in the third period, the shots were 10-9. It was even, but Somerset managed 3 goals in that third period to Superior getting 0 to take the 5-2 win. So, you know, 6-3, but that was contested for 2 periods. So yeah, I think there's a sigh of relief there, but you know, it was not Superior's year this year.
But how many times have we thought it wasn't going to be Superior's year, and lo and behold, they're in Madison and they're winning. You know, because
I thought that last year. I believe I even said on our podcast last year that, you know, the Superior team from the year before, the 2013-2014 Superior team, didn't win state. And I still think they would have stomped the 2014-2015 Superior team that did win state. And they did it pretty convincingly. So, you know, what the hell do we know?
What the hell do we know?
A couple other good games happened, even though there were no real upsets. number 3 seed Hayward and number 6 seed Regis Altoona-McDonald. Regis Altoona-McDonald actually had a 3-0 lead 3 minutes into the second period of that game. If you'd have told that team that they would have a 3-0 lead 3 minutes into the second period of that game, I think they'd have been thrilled by it. But then Hayward rattled off 6 straight to take that game 6-3. I actually like this Hayward team. They had a really nice showing at the Pines Classic. They took a 2-1 loss to University School, who's been in or around the top 10 all year, and then they thumped Northland Pines on the second day of the tournament. I think it was 6-1. So I think Hayward's got a nice team, and it shows a lot that they came back from down 3-0 to go back and win that game by 3 goals. And then I believe last week we talked about how Bergler and I think we talked about the fact that we thought Waupun was kind of short on the bench. And over the course of the season, their third periods haven't been very good. They're outshot in the third period. They're outscored in the third period. Well, they shut us up. In the third period, they were actually down 4-2 to Cedarburg. And they outshot Cedarburg 26-7 in the third period to take 3 goals off Matt McCoy, last year's winner of the Kirk Dobbinsbeck Award. 3 goals in that third period to take the game 5-4. Brady Beekman from Waupun scored his 100th career goal in that game, and then his 101st career goal was actually the 5th goal, the game winner. So those are a couple good games there.
I had a chance earlier in the year to see Cedarburg, and you know, they were just a team that was just going to struggle to score during the year, and you know, they didn't have the same guys that they had back from the year before, so you know, a lot was going to be resting on Matt McCoy this year to if they were going to go anywhere. And, you know, it just seemed like, you know, that they went, Cedarburg went as far as Matt McCoy was going to be able to take them.
And Matt McCoy, last year's Kirk Dobbinsbeck Award winner, is a finalist again this year for the Kirk Dobbinsbeck Award. Another award we give out is the Davis Drewiski Award. And one of the finalists we have from that played in a game yesterday, I think, that was probably even bigger than any of these playoff games. A gold medal game in the Junior Olympics over in Norway. Ty Emberson, the U.S. beating them Canadians.
Yep, so he can come back to the rest of Eau Claire Memorial's playoff run, thanks to everybody in the state yelling at the WIA. And wear a gold medal underneath his jersey, above his shoulder pads, you know, just for luck.
But no jewelry on the ice.
Wear it under your jersey, nobody will notice. You know, his gold medal. We'll go through the award nominees, finalists now. We posted them on the site today. The coaches wrapped up voting on Wednesday last week. For forwards, the Joe Pavelski Award on the boys' side, our finalists are Alex Nagel of Anago, Dylan Ross of Eau Claire Memorial, Jacob Thousand of Wanakee, Trenton Bliss of Appleton United, and Tyler Ebner of Onalaska. On the girls' side, the Janelle Sergi Award, Abigail Stowe of Eau Claire Altoona, Anna Wilgren of Hudson, Katie Dietert of the Northern Edge, Marky Ash of Wapaka, and Nicole Unsworth of University School. I believe Unsworth was last year's winner. Defense, Davis Drewiski Award for the boys, Davis Buns of Middleton, Sam Storley of Rapids, Sean Driscoll of Homestead, Stephen Mordini of Baraboo Portage, and Ty Emberson of Eau Claire Memorial. The Molly Engstrom Award for girls defensemen, Alex Grubbs of Hayward, Allie Fox of Fox Cities, Emma Peterson of Superior, Maddie Rowe of St. Croix Valley, and Morgan Zerbel of Bay Area. And for the goalies, Dobbinsbeck Award for the boys, Dylan Finney of Appleton United, Max Schmidt of University School, Matt McCoy of Cedarburg, last year's winner, Tommy Mose of Madison Edgewood, and Walker Smith of Waupaka. And for the girls, the Jesse Vetter Award, Abby Weisrock of Arrowhead, Erin Connolly of Lakeshore, Lauren Tremblay of Hayward, Marie Dietert of University School, and Rebecca Binder or Binder, I don't know which it is, of Fond du Lac. So those are WIP Award finalists.
You know, looking at the Dobbinsbeck Award, remember 2 years ago, USM had a goaltender who won that award, Brian Botcher. Now Max Schmidt is in the running for it.
And, you know, we don't, unlike the coaches' Player of the Year award, which is seniors only. We don't restrict it to seniors. And on the boys' side, there's only two repeat nominees from last year. Matt McCloy in the Dobinspec Award and Alex Nagel in the Pavelski Award are our only repeats from last year on the boys' side. The girls' side, we've got a few more repeats. Katie Dietert was a nominee last year. Nicole Unsworth was a nominee last year. I believe Maddie Rowe was a nominee last year. I believe Tremblay and Connolly were both nominees last year. That's off the top of my head. So on the girls' side, with just 33 teams, it's a little harder to have no repeats. But on the boys' side, you know, of those 15 players, 13 of them weren't on the finalist list last year.
And that's going to be held at the Coliseum Bar, correct?
Yep. No, the banquet room above the Coliseum Bar. We would never hold high school awards like this in a bar. It's the banquet room above the Coliseum.
Oh, okay. I got
9 a.m. on Championship Saturday. The banquet room above the Coliseum Bar across the street from the Alliant Energy Dump.
And they're
the clamshell. Mm-hmm. All right.
The concrete donut.
I still like that place.
It's all right.
I don't have to sit in the regular seats that everybody hates and all that. You know, when I'm there, we get our suite and all that. So I don't have to deal with some of the things that all the fans have to deal with. But I like that place.
You know, I talked to quite a few people about this subject, and a lot of people feel the same way. They like the Coliseum. They liked it. We're more talking about that in the day of the Badgers. There's a lot of people that really wish the Badgers still played at the Coliseum.
Well, that's just nostalgia. Nostalgia is dangerous.
No. But people like, you know, because the sightlines are better. I mean, really, when you think about it, I don't think there's very many bad seats up there at the Coliseum. But
well, every year, you know, we try and get people to come down to the state tournament, and every year we get comments from people saying, you know, if they'd move it, I'd go. And if that's your reason for not going, I question your hockey fandom. You know, as much as you may dislike that arena, it's better than most of the youth arenas in the state that high school teams play at all year long. You know, it's maybe not as nice as Edgewood plays in Laban Arena where the UW women play their games. But, you know, other than that, better than most of them. The fact that it's at the Alliant is no excuse not to be down there.
No, because the major issues that they had before were the ice conditions, which they've really taken care of. I've not heard complaints from players or coaches about the ice for the last 2 or 3 years. They replaced the scoreboard, so you don't have your random horn sound and everything reset to zero. That got to be a bit annoying, but that's been taken care of. So they have made improvements to the place.
And they have hockey all season there now with the Madison Capitals playing there. So they have hockey there all season. It's not like a thing they set up for a weekend and then take down anymore.
Right, so that'll definitely help the ice conditions even more so than just when they threw it in for a couple weeks or whatever they did.
I mean, they get feedback on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put the ice up for a couple weeks, nobody uses it, and all of a sudden you have a tournament on it. You don't get any feedback on what's going on, but now they get feedback all season long from how the ice is playing.
And looking right now at the Madison Capitals schedule, they are basically out of town all the way up to the state tournament. So that ice is going to be sitting there for a while again. So, I mean, this past weekend, even, they had the circus there.
So there's elephant dung all over the rink?
It's the circus road trip, just like they do to the Blackhawks and the Chicago Bulls.
Oh, okay.
The elephants are just wonderful on skates. If you get a chance to see elephants on skates, you should really check that out.
Well, on that note, by the way, guys, 36 years ago today, the U.S. won over the Soviets 4-3.
And where were you watching that game?
I was at home watching that game.
Okay.
And I remember my mom screaming at the TV very loudly during that game, especially in the third period.
I will not be 36 for another 18 months. So
all you got is what you see on YouTube.
All I have is grainy old footage of Al Michaels.
And the funny thing was, is that game, when it was played, it was tape delay.
Yeah, they had never gotten away with that.
No. No. Absolutely not.
Oh, God, no.
And if you haven't already read it, read The Boys of Winter. It's an awesome, awesome book.
I've read
about
that.
About the AD team. Great book. So much detail in there. It's amazing. The author did a wonderful job.
You know, Trash, you get worse at this every day, and right now you're talking like it's a week from Thursday.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just tried to throw in a Herb Brooksism in there. Wasn't that his thing? You get worse every day, and right now you're playing like next week.
Yeah.
You know, even when you watch the movie Miracle, I mean, it's a great movie, but just to have lived that it's hard to fathom being a player and actually living that during that time. And I guess what I'm trying to say is a lot of times, I put this on Facebook today, the younger generation, just like, you know, Bill Jr., I mean, to know what the United States was at that point back then, of how this country was, and to know how much of a lift those guys beating the Soviets gave the country is amazing.
And it ensured that as long as Mark Johnson coaches college hockey, his team will never talk back to him.
Why would they?
They can't.
Why can't they?
Because then he just turns on the movie.
And an interesting little piece of tidbitism or trivia, whatever you want to call it, Neil Broughton lives in River Falls, and according to Fusion coach Matt Cranston, he lives a 9-iron away from his house. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Didn't we just see Neil Broughton in the Blackhawks North Stars alumni game on Saturday?
I didn't get a chance to see that.
Oh, okay. In that case, we did. Neil Broughton was playing in that, as was Dave Christian. One was from War Road, one was from Roseau, two towns up on the Canadian border that have always been bitter rivals, and they played against each other. One went to University of Minnesota. The other one went to a different college. And the only time they ever played together was on the Olympic team. And they were both playing in that alumni game Saturday.
How about that? Outdoor game? 50,000 people there in Minnesota, and was well represented. And
the Blackhawks laid an egg.
Oh, did they ever? They laid a big time egg. But according to the league, Michael Roosevelt will not get any suspension. He will not have a hearing on his hit on Jason Zucker.
Well, Blackhawks
because it
never
looked like
cheat.
What's that?
Blackhawks never cheat.
Right. And then we should probably call this a night. Take us home, MJ.
Take us home. Well, here's the thing. Before we get out of here,
all right.
What should our theme song going out this week be, or going in? You listener, you'll know it already before we even pick it when you start listening to this broadcast. So for Trasher,
what did you have in mind?
Nothing in particular.
Okay.
Nothing in particular. But if you have a song that you would like Burglar to play for an opening, he takes requests. Just send it to submit@wisconsinprephockey.net, and Burglar will look it up through his musical archive. And if it's a Bruce Springsteen song, it will get a little bit more of a boost of a chance to hear it. So for Burglar, Bill Jr., Trasher, Dell out on assignment, I'm Mike Hammett. Hey, hope you enjoyed the show. Got any thoughts or comments? Submit at WisconsinPrepHockey.net or just call Trasher. He'll handle it all from there. So we'll see you after the sectional finals, and we'll talk next week when the state tournament will get started, and it should be a lot of fun. So you've been listening to This Week in Wisconsin Prep Hockey.